Yes, it's a good day for singing a song, and it's a good day for moving along. Yes, it's a good day. How could anything go wrong? A good day from morning till night. Yes, it's a good day for shining your shoes, and it's a good day for losing the blues. Everything to gain and nothing to lose, because it's a good day.
My returning guest tonight is Tish Oney. She's a vocalist, composer, arranger, author, and performing artist. Her latest recording is The Best Part. Her latest book is Peggy Lee, A Century of Song. Tish, it's such a pleasure to be talking to you again. And for the benefit of the audience, you know, we talked about your book, which was talking about Peggy Lee. And then the more I read about you, I realized I was just as interested in your career. So welcome to the show again.
Well, thank you so much. That's very flattering, and thanks for having me on.
I want to talk first about your latest album, The Best Part. Talk to me about that, because these are new songs by contemporary jazz composers, but there are three never sort of recorded songs by Peggy Lee. You got to talk to me about that.
Yes. Okay, so John Chiodini, who was Peggy Lee's musical director throughout the 1980s, and a collaborative composer with Peggy Lee, wrote 14 songs together with her. Several of those songs they had a chance to record, and several of them they never did record before she passed away. So John has had in his vault this stash of Peggy Lee originals that no one has ever recorded. So he really wanted to selectively decide when those songs came to public awareness. And as we toured and recorded together over the years and performed a lot of these songs, even the unrecorded ones, he decided that he wanted me to be the one to record those songs first.
Did you get to choose which ones, or he chose?
We both chose. We talked about it, and we had already recorded Over the Wheel and Boomerang for our 2008 project, Dear Peg.
Mm-hmm.
And those were two Peggy Lee, John Chiodini collaborations. But we decided to add to this The Best Part 2019 album three songs that John and Peggy wrote together. Most of all, I Love You, I've Been Too Lonely for Too Long, and I've Got a Brand New Baby.
Now, as a vocal artist like yourself, we're going to talk more about that later, what do you look for in a song that makes you want to record it or makes you want to sing it in front of an audience?
The song has to have something about it that I can relate to. And
on a personal level?
Yes, I think so. Yeah. And or I can, if I can create that character that can sing that song in a way that that fits my personality. You know, I'm an actress to some degree, and I can relate to a lot of different types of people, and so I can put on that persona, but it's more personal if it's really coming from my heart. You know, so I can either act like this is me, which a lot of singers do, or it's, as Peggy Lee did, you could find something about it that resonates, even if it's one tiny aspect of that song that you can relate to and tell the story. So that's what I look for.
Now, in your introduction, I talked about the book Peggy Lee, A Century of Song. Peggy Lee and you seem to be like infinitely connected. Talk to me about that interest in Peggy Lee.
Oh, thank you for noticing that. I'm really glad that you did. You're one of the first people that's actually mentioned that. But I think it's profoundly obvious, but people that don't necessarily know me don't know that. Well, Peggy Lee struck me when I was a child, when I saw her performing on PBS, a PBS special. She was in front of a band, first of all, singing music that I loved. I was addicted to listening to Ella Fitzgerald and Nat King Cole when I was 13 years old, and Doris Day, and some favorites from my parents, and so we shared that in common, and Peggy just commanded the stage, and she decided that she was going to run this show when I saw her on this PBS special. It was the Atlantic City performance that became the DVD known as The Quintessential Peggy Lee. So this performance was a real turning point for me, and I saw the music I wanted to do. I saw a person that I thought I could emulate, and who also brought her own polish and her own style to the Great American Songbook songs that I was familiar with other people singing.
Now, I want to get back into your past, because as I was researching you for this interview, you've done an incredibly varied number of projects. And as I mentioned, you're a vocalist, a soprano vocalist, composer, arranger, author, performing artist. But when you've performed in a variety of music styles.
Yeah.
Baroque, you've done opera. Talk to me about the beginning. When you were a wee child, which isn't that long ago, how did this whole thing start? I mean, you've been a professor of music. You got your doctorate. And so you're on like every side of music. Where did this passion originate? Talk to me as a young child maturing. At what point in your life did you realize this is going to be my career? This is going to be my life.
Well,
it sounds like you came from a family that loved music.
Yes. Yes, and my family that did a lot of things well, you know. So my dad was a botanist and a farmer. My mom was a special education teacher. My brother is an ocean engineer, and another brother was a math teacher, wrestling coach, and electrical engineer.
Were you youngest, the middle, or the first?
Yes, I was the youngest.
So the sense of competition was great.
Oh, it was very, yes, very much so. Very much so.
But they're doing all these very technical things.
Yes.
And you decided to do the art thing.
Started in science, and I have a degree from Cornell University in microbiology.
Okay, therein lies a story, Tish, that I need to know.
Yeah, I know.
But, you know, it's so funny that how many artists have gone down this route where they're either on their way in medical school or they're doing X, Y, and Z, and all of a sudden there's this one thing that happens that turns on the passion.
Yes, there is. And you want to hear about that one thing?
Of course, no. I just decided to call you and ask you about the weather.
It's a fun part of the story, and I love to share it. Okay, so the summer before I was a senior in college was my last hurrah summer in my mind. I was going to go be a doctor. I was applying to medical school as soon as I came back from my summer experience, and I had just taken the MCAT. So we were ready to go to med school, and I thought, this is my last summer to do something musical or theatrical. What do I want to do? So I auditioned for Aspen summer music program, and I got in, and I auditioned for the Rome Festival Opera Institute that was going, sending a group of singers to Italy, and I got in.
Well, and had you already been singing opera?
A little bit, in private voice lessons,
Okay, okay.
And musicals on the stage in high school.
Okay.
But then I also auditioned for the Kitchen Theater Summer Apprentice Program in Ithaca, New York, and I got in. So I had all of these things that I didn't expect to have to make this decision. And I thought, well, heck, I'm going to go abroad. If I can go abroad, I'm going to go. So I went to Rome.
Oh, whoa.
And I was the understudy for Susanna in Le Nozze di Figaro. And the lead never showed. So she didn't
Oh, my God.
I had to sing the lead role, never having studied Italian, never having taken Italian diction yet. All of these other actors singers, you know, were opera singers already. And they're looking at me, and Susanna's the lead. This is the longest comic opera role in a comic opera. So I didn't know that, and I'm glad I didn't know that at the time. It's a four-act opera. And anyway, I did two performances as Susanna. I learned it all phonetically, listened to it over and over again on the beach in Hawaii a month before I went, because my brothers lived in Hawaii. So It was like an artist retreat where I learned my role. And I went and I had the time of my life, and the cast came around me at the end and said, "You really have a future in this. If you can do this so well, are you sure you want to be a doctor?" So I was bitten by the music bug, and it never let me go.
Oh, my God.
Before that, I had been singing jazz professionally since I was 15. I looked at that as sort of a moonlighting gig, you know,
side. Yeah, absolutely.
And I never intended to stop doing that, but I also didn't intend to major in it because I felt I already did it fairly well.
Still, so, that's a huge life decision to make.
Yes.
Did you agonize over, or was it just obvious that this is what you needed to do?
At that point, I agonized for maybe a week, and then I never looked back and decided that this is what I got to do because I really love to sing.
So it was bye-bye mitochondria, hello Peggy Lee.
Yes, exactly.
Oh, man.
Exactly. Exactly.
That is an amazing story, Tish. First of all, the idea of having to get up there and perform in that opera, that scares the bejesus out of me. That's like when you have a nightmare. You're getting
up. It's a little scary. Yes, it's a little scary, especially when there's one scene every night that you go, "I really hope I don't forget the order of the lines."
Oh my God.
In this scene, you know, I'm here. It's time for me to go on the stage. Here we go. And it just worked out every night. So I pulled it off, and it was great, great fun. We had just a blast. We had so much fun.
Now, you ended up going back to school again. And you got your degree in jazz.
Yes, because I already had a degree in classical voice. So see, this is the thing about me. Once I do something, I like to do it and then move on and go towards something else.
What's the next big project?
For me now?
No, I'm just saying that's the way you're operating.
Well, yes, that's just the way I operate.
I'm done with this. Now what else can I do?
Right.
Oh, my God. So wait a minute. You get the classical music training.
Yes.
Why did you want to go back in jazz, and you didn't see yourself a career in classical vocal?
Well, I was already, you know, I had some really great teachers all along the way, and my college voice teacher said something that was still this sage wisdom that guides me, and that is, pay attention to the music people pay you to sing, not the music you want to sing. Pay attention to what you're being thrown money to sing. And that has always been jazz for me.
Huh.
I had been thrown money, literally, already as a young, you know, 21, 22-year-old opera singer wannabe. As a jazz singer, I was really making money and making recordings and getting calls and getting all kinds of opportunities. And so I paid attention, and I continued to do it, and it just really, it invited a lot of work for me because I listened to what the audience wanted me to sing.
For a person who's not a vocalist, the idea of singing opera versus the idea of singing jazz, it seems like living on Pluto versus living on Mercury. I mean, it's like...
Wow.
Yeah, I mean,
it's... quite an analogy.
Well, it seems that disparate. You know, the whole conceptual thing of opera, the whole history of opera, and then the whole history of jazz, and is it as different as I am imagining it, or are you seeing similarities?
Yes, it really is different, and it's very ironic that you mention this because I just got off a Zoom voice lesson of a student of mine who is an opera singer who wants to sing jazz, and she's singing a jazz concert next week. And so we're having this exact same conversation with my students who are professional singers who want to learn to do what they do even better.
One of the things that strikes me is about jazz is it encourages improvisation, whereas opera probably doesn't at all.
And that's right.
You in fact have an entire history of the opera being performed that you're sort of stepping into those shoes.
Yes. However, I have to tell you, I have applied my improvisational skills in opera in the past, and it has gotten me through in a way. And I'd love to share that story.
Share that story to me because that sounds fascinating.
Yeah. When I was in Rome, there was a moment when my Figaro actor had forgot his lines. It was a crucial moment in Act 4 where he's on his knees begging forgiveness for not trusting me.
Yep.
Me, Susanna, for not trusting Susanna. And he forgot what he was supposed to sing. And so the fact that I knew what his part was in addition to my own allowed me to improvise a way of sending him the lines. And my skills in improvisation just came naturally to me, and I knew that something had to be done at that moment. So I was comfortable singing his part in a mocking kind of a way, as if should be saying these apologies to me, but that's what I really want to hear. And so he played off of me. I gave him the lines, and we got through it. And the conductor came to me afterward and thanked me for basically knowing what to do in that situation when others probably wouldn't have done that.
They would have just frozen. They would just froze.
They just wouldn't have known what to do. But I figured, well, the show's going to go on, so we might as well get the lines out that we're supposed to have, because if we don't, I might miss my own part. You know, my own cue is coming. And so if he's not going to sing it, I'm going to.
So this is the jazz artist that comes through in the opera performance.
Yes, exactly.
So you go back to school again in jazz, and then talk to me about setting out to make a career out of it, because that seems incredibly difficult, especially in America. I know that because we're one of the leading jazz stations in New England,
right?
And the fact that that jazz does not get played a lot, on the air, and there's less recognition of it by the public, but the people who are passionate about it are really passionate about it. So talk to me about making that decision, because that's a difficult decision to make, too, that, yeah, I'm going to be a jazz vocalist.
Yeah, well, it goes back to the fact that I had already logged in probably thousands of performances of jazz by the time I was in my mid-20s. And it was just, there was no turning back. You know, there was no trading that in for something else.
Had you already built up a following?
Yes, and I was gearing up for my first recording, and I just decided, I was getting opportunities to do lots of different types of things, and I just loved the music, and I felt that I had something to say.
Yep.
You know, and I had the skills to arrange songs however I wanted to, and I had the opportunity to teach vocal jazz at Syracuse University under Joe Raposo, who was the chair of the jazz department, who talked me into applying for the job when it was open. Because Joe and I were in a band that I led, and he said, I want you to be the vocal jazz director. And I said, well, but Joe, you know, I'm a jazz soloist. I'm not a jazz, you know, conductor or director. And he said, no, but you're on the voice faculty. You know how the voice works. You've got a classical voice degree. The voice faculty respect you, and we need all that so that we can recruit students and have that understanding that you're not going to ruin their voices because you're one of them. And we're also bandmates. And so the fact that I could teach jazz alongside my performance career always gave me a dual career opportunity. And so I think that really helped get me through the fact that I was teaching and performing at the same time, and they were feeding each other.
Yep. You're listening to WISN 90.5 FM. This is Inquiry. My name is Mark Lynch. My returning guest tonight, and it's always a pleasure to talk to her, is Tish Oney. She's a vocalist, composer, arranger, author, performing artist. Her latest recording is called The Best Part. Her latest book is Peggy Lee, A Century of Song. And actually, you've written another book about jazz voice, right? You wrote a book called A Guide to Singing Pedagogy.
That is actually in progress. It's coming out next year.
It sounds like a very academic book. Any book that has pedagogy in the title.
In the title.
It's not going to be one of those things. The average person's going to go, you know, I think I'll pick up that book. Is this a book geared for university level voice training?
Well, you know, I think there's an audience. There's a tripartite audience. There's the jazz.
Ooh, I love
student.
Tripartite, yeah. Pedagogy. Wow,
jazz voice student. Thank you. There's the teacher who wants to be teaching jazz voice to their students. And there's the working jazz singer who knows they need to fill in some gaps. So those are the three target audiences that I have in mind.
How difficult is it as a person who has no concept of how this would go to teach voice? I mean, it's got to be both a combination of ideas and theory with very physical training.
Yes, absolutely.
It is.
And you have to be, I think, somewhat empathic toward the person that's in the room, and you have to teach the person that's in the room with their current issues and challenges today, which may be different from last week's issues and challenges and will be different from next week's issues and challenges, because the voice, of course, is a musical instrument that is housed inside the human body, which is attacked every day and experiencing variations in environment and in nutrition and hydration and illness and disease and allergy and, oh my goodness, and stress and emotional turmoil, and you know. So the instrument is difficult to teach, and so is the mind of the artist that has it. I think it's a unique personality that is called to teach singing.
Talk to me more about that. Like, what kind of personality would that be? A very empathetic one is what you said.
Yes, an empathetic one, and somebody who can be technical as well as scientific, as well as musical and creative. So every student is not the same. You can't approach this as an assembly line kind of educational model. It has to be very much tailored to each individual voice and human being that's in the room.
Are there people that you say you just really shouldn't be following this? You should be doing something else.
Absolutely.
Okay.
Yes. You have to be honest.
That sounds like another thing. By the way, the entire time you were describing your technique of teaching, it really brought to mind that your entire medical technical career really came in handy.
Well, I'd like to think so, yes.
Because you take a very scientific approach to things, too, as well as everything else.
Yes, I try to incorporate that because, truth be told, I learned more about singing when I learned about the science behind the singing voice and the physics of singing. That's when my technique came together, because I could think like a scientist and I could solve my own problems.
And this is a very personal question. You have so much knowledge and academic knowledge as well as performance knowledge.
Thank you.
Does that get in the way of a freeform jazz performance while you're on stage? Like, are you always technically analyzing what you're doing at that moment, or do you use techniques to sort of put yourself in the moment and forget everything?
No, I don't think it gets in the way at all. I think my colleague Joe Raposo has written about this, and he wrote a book called Jazz Improvisation, The Whole Brain Approach.
Nice,
and
okay.
His technique, his approach is to train both. Now, we know that it's not this cut and dry, but for purposes of discussion, the left brain and the right brain, the logical side of our brain and our creative side of our brain. So obviously they are more interrelated than just right and left, but there are two parts of that musical personality, the analytical side and the creative side. And so I think having a balance of both is really necessary for jazz performance at a very high level.
So everything's in the corpus callosum.
Yes.
Okay. Now, you just had your first live performance in quite a while last night. Talk to me about that. How long had you not been performing because of, obviously, COVID? Oh, yeah. My God. What was it like to get back on stage?
It was really fun.
I was straightlining you, Tish. I hated it.
It was so much fun. We had a good time. And this was a group that I've performed with quite a bit. So this was a special treat. In fact, they were the last group I had performed with 6 months ago. And then 6 months went by, and we got to do this again last night. Now, I wore a mask, and it was a socially distanced outdoor performance.
Did you wear a mask while you were singing?
I sure did, and it was partly...
Tish, good for you.
I know. Thank you. I'm glad you feel that way.
Oh, man.
Well, I feel like I have to set an example, you know? They make singers' resonance masks.
You just keep getting better.
Oh, thank you. They make singers' resonance masks, and so I thought, well, I'm going to give this a try. And I had no complaints. In fact, people said we were shocked at how well we could hear your enunciation, your diction, your pitch, your rhythm.
Oh, man.
Didn't interfere with anything at all. And I said, well, great. I'm a believer now, too, that I can wear a mask and do this music justice.
That is fantastic. And so now, are you going to now line up different gigs and start to perform?
Well, I'd like to, yeah, if we can.
Everything's still in flux.
It
really is. We are almost out of time, and I just wanted to ask you, there's a cycle of three songs written for you by Fred Thayer?
Oh, yes. Mm-hmm.
Talk to me about that. He was described as an American art song composer. So he wrote three songs just for you?
Yes. Well, we met at... the Adirondack Festival of American Music. And so these are art songs, American art songs. So they're not jazz at all.
Wow.
They are in the art song category, American art song category. And he is a wonderful composer.
Fantastic.
He asked me to choose the poetry. And so I went home and I picked up some books of poems. Of course, I love poetry.
I know that.
Yeah. And so I found three poems by...
Are these recorded
anywhere? Lord Tennyson.
We're completely...
No, they are not. They're not recorded.
We're completely out of time. I've just realized I looked at the clock.
Okay.
And I feel like we could be talking for hours.
I know.
There's so much more I had to talk to you about.
Well, we can. I know.
Well, we will again.
We can keep going. Absolutely.
Yeah. My returning guest tonight is vocalist, composer, arranger, author, performing artist, and socially distant performing artist, Tish Oney. Her latest album is The Best Part. Her latest book, which is amazing, Peggy Lee, A Century of Song. Tish, it's a real pleasure to talk to you, and I know we're going to talk again.
Well, thank you so much, Mark. It's always a pleasure to talk to you, too.
You're listening to WISN 90.5 FM. This is Inquiry. My name is Mark Lynch. Good night.
Yes, it's a good day for singing a song, and it's a good day for moving along. Yes, it's a good day. How could anything go wrong? A good day from morning till night. Yes, it's a good day for shining your shoes, and it's a good day for losing the blues. Everything to gain.